This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Congressional candidate Betsy Dirksen-Lonergan says all the argument among presidential candidates about health care misses a key point.
Republicans are not in the business of protecting health care. The only ones having these discussions are Democrats.
Listen to Lonergan's vision in a Ryan Denham interview. Plus, Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council CEO Patrick Hoban tells you about smart cities and the One Voice trip to D.C. You can hear the organ and soul of Neil Francis. And Mike McCurdy and Patrick Murphy give you dead of winter gardening advice on WGLT's podcast, Grow. That and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Congressional candidate Betsy Dirksen-Lonergan has made health care her signature issue. There is another Democrat in the March 17th primary who is also talking about that issue. Stephanie Smith of Urbana supports Medicare for All, also known as a single-payer system. That's where the government provides insurance to everyone. Lonergan supports a less radical change, a new public option. People could buy into a government-run insurance program like Medicare. Private insurance would still exist, but people could choose to get a government insurance plan instead. Ryan Denham speaks to Lonergan about this distinction between her and Smith.
You know, my number one priority is making sure that everyone has access to quality, affordable care, that people can get their prescription drugs, that they can get to a doctor when they need one, and that no one, you know, faces bankruptcy because of one medical bill. And I am, you know, I'm not for Medicare for All because across the district, I hear from people who like the insurance they have. They want to keep it. It's just they need help with the cost. And so I think in our district, a really good alternative is to introduce Medicare as a public option, particularly beginning in our rural communities and with small business owners, because our rural communities have lost providers. So this would bring competition to the market and lower the costs. And I also think it is absolutely critical that we address the cost of prescription drugs. And Democrats passed a great bill in Congress called the Lower Prescription Drugs Now Act, and it would allow Medicare to negotiate for drug prices, bringing the costs down. I think they said it would save us, you know, around $400 billion. I think it averaged out to around $1,900 a family. That is a direct positive impact on our community. And Rodney Davis voted against it. I think that's a huge mistake because I hear from people every day who are making difficult choices regarding their prescription drugs. And I think that he's on the wrong side of that issue. He's taken hundreds of thousands of dollars from pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies, and he's not listening to people in the 13th district.
I think the last time we spoke, I asked you where would you start on health care, and I think the allowing Medicare to negotiate for lower drug prices was the first thing you mentioned.
It's huge.
I think priority number one.
Brian, it's a big deal. You know, think about it this way. You know, we hear story. You know, we hear about you know, different ways that the government uses its purchasing power, right? So if they, you know, if the military needs something purchased, they put out the RFPs, the request for proposals, to make sure that they are spending taxpayer dollars wisely. So why wouldn't we use our purchase power to make sure that we are spending people's tax dollars wisely and also bringing down their costs?
So what if we have the scenario, though, where Bernie Sanders is the Democratic nominee for president? How would you square your concerns with Medicare for All with, you know, the person at the top of the Democratic ticket, you know, being a vocal supporter of it?
Sure. You know, my job when I go to Washington is to advocate for people in the 13th district. And they tell me every day, that they want to protect the Affordable Care Act. They want to see it fixed. They know that it's not perfect. But they want protection for people with pre-existing conditions. That's another big issue. They want all of those essential health benefits. And so that is my job. But let's be clear about something here, Ryan. Republicans are not in the business of protecting health care. The only ones having these discussions about, you know, which tack to take to make health care better are Democrats. The Republican answer is to take it all away. Rodney Davis has voted over and over again to repeal the ACA. He just voted again against protecting people with pre-existing conditions. They have no plan, and their answer is to get rid of all of it.
To that end, incumbent Congressman Rodney Davis, who you've mentioned, recently voted against a House resolution that condemned the Trump administration's Medicaid block grant plan. Supporters say that this new approach would ensure financial sustainability for the Medicaid program in the long term by letting states operate with a defined budget for it. Medicaid advocates argue that the changes would hurt low-income people and invite states to, you know, cut costs, reduce coverage. What do you make of this? They don't call it a block grant plan, but what do you make of that proposal?
It will hurt Medicaid recipients. Don't let people confuse the issue. Those are cuts. And you also need to look no further. If you're talking about priorities here, look no further than the budget that President Trump just unveiled. It has steep cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, among a host of other things that we care about. But those are cuts.
How would you protect Medicaid, making sure it's funded sustainably into the future, while also making sure, as Republicans always raise this point, make sure it's not being abused, that waste is always being reduced, that people are only using it when they need to? How do you do both of those things at the same time?
Well, we can obviously do better. And I see myself going to Congress and making sure that I am a custodian of our taxpayer dollars in the most responsible way. And I don't take those decisions lightly. My priorities are to make sure that Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security are here for us now, in 5 years, in 20 years, and down the road.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm in studio with Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan of Springfield, who's running again in the 13th Congressional District. That includes parts of Bloomington Normal. She'll face Stephanie Smith in the March 17th Democratic primary. The winner would face Republican Congressman Rodney Davis in November. So, Betsy, the Democratic Party is doing a bit of soul-searching right now. You can see it in any of the presidential debates. So there are some Democrats in the 13th District, given that backdrop, who may feel that you're not progressive enough for them, that you don't support Medicare for All, for example, that you just explained why, that you raise big money. What is your response to that concern?
Our mission is to make sure that we flip the Illinois 13th District. Right now, we have a representative in Congress who has taken millions of dollars from corporate PACs and special interests, who votes against really important issues like climate action now to get us back into the Paris Climate Accord, voted against criminal background checks, voted against the Equality Act, and just voted against the PRO Act. The PRO Act, Ryan, is the Protect the Right to Organize Act. It is the fundamentals of unions and making sure that we make it simpler for people to join and form unions, make it simpler for them to be part of them, because we know that if we want to build the middle class, we want to help working families, unions are our path. He voted against it. So the question that we need to address here is, what is our number one mission? Our mission is to flip this seat. And I have built this amazing grassroots army over the course of the last cycle. Ryan, we came into this race for 2020 with over 2,000 volunteers already who are fired up and ready to go. We are phone banking at night. We are knocking doors on weekends. We are spreading our message about protecting health care, about protecting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, about protecting our rural communities, about making sure our kids get a good education. Those are the bread and butter issues that people in Central Illinois care about.
Yeah, to the point you just made, how does your campaign look today versus where it was, you know, 2 years ago? So 2 years ago, that would have been right before this five-way primary. That was really interesting, the dynamics of that. Where are you today versus then?
Well, I can tell you that, two of my most adamant supporters are John Ebel from Champaign and Eric Jones from Madison County, both who were primary opponents last time, who have become very dear friends and are outstanding supporters. But we've built, like I said, over the course of the last cycle, I put 63,000 miles on my car last cycle, getting around the district and listening to people and doing the work of bringing people into the fold. And so this time we start out with all of those volunteers who are, multiplying and ready to help flip this seat. Hmm. It's great.
So which presidential candidate will you be supporting March 17th?
Well, I think I'm just like everybody else, Ryan. I'm watching to see how people perform and what unfolds. What I can tell you is that whoever is at the top of the ticket, I will work with people up the ballot and down the ballot to make sure that we elect a Democrat for president and we elect a Democrat in Illinois 13.
Have you narrowed your possibilities? Any two, three that you are deciding between?
I'm still watching. There was a fiery debate the other night.
Yeah, fiery, yeah. That's a good way to put it.
It was interesting.
So I want to pivot here to the economy, Betsy. Congressman Davis is likely to run for re-election based in part on his support for the corporate and individual tax cuts that passed in late 2017. I guess they went into effect in early 2018. So he'll argue, I'm sure, that those tax cuts are a main reason why the economy is doing as well as it is. What is your response to that argument?
I think he's talking to the corporations that give him money and the super rich people who benefited from the tax cuts. Over 83% of the benefits went to the top 1% in corporations. And Congressman Davis spent a lot of time telling everybody that this was for the middle class, which it wasn't. That has borne out to that assertion has borne out to be false. He has spent a lot of time telling people, no, the corporations, they're going to put it back into wages and they're going to put it back into capital improvement projects. That's not what they did. They gave that money to their stockholders in the form of dividends. They did stock buybacks. That's what they did with that money. It didn't go to raising wages and improving workers' lives. I want tax reform that is aimed at the middle class. That's who needs the leg up, not corporations. They're doing just fine.
What is your read on the economy and how well it's working or not working, specifically in the 13th district?
Well, I'm glad that the job growth continues. I would say that if you talk and listen to people within, like in Central Illinois, they'll tell you that they don't feel it in their pocketbooks. Again, they're not the top 1%. We aren't. That's not how the makeup of our district. And they're still working multiple jobs. They're still worrying about how they're going to make ends meet at the end of the month. So they're not feeling it.
Another issue that's wrapped up in the economy, and is certainly of interest to our listeners, is climate change. Republicans often make the argument that action on climate has to be weighed against the economic impact that whatever that action may have. So how would a Congresswoman Londrigan approach environmental policy?
Well, number one, I believe that clean air, clean water, and clean land are basic human rights. And it doesn't matter where I go in the district, people share that belief. I believe that we should be in the Paris Climate Accord. I think that was a mistake for the president to leave it. And I agreed with the House passing Climate Action Now, which essentially said the United States needs to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord and not only have a seat at that table, but be leaders. Congressman Davis voted against that. And I think that was a mistake and disrespectful to people in the district. You don't need to look any further than Central Illinois to see the devastating effects of climate change. We had historic flooding last season. And you know, I want to make sure, I would like to be on the select committee to address the climate crisis, because it's what that committee does is looks at every policy through the prism of the climate crisis. And I think that's important. I think that's I would want to be part of that.
That's Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan of Springfield, who's running for the 13th Congressional District. Betsy, thanks for your time.
It's my pleasure.
I'm Ryan Denham.
Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan faces Stephanie Smith of Urbana in the March 17th Democratic primary for the 13th Congressional District. You'll hear from Smith next week on Sound Ideas.
Support for WGLT comes from Forget-Me-Not Flowers, a full-service florist here to help you with all of life's important events, weddings, anniversaries, condolences, new babies, school dances, and more. Available at 309-829-1001 or at the shop in Tawanda Plaza. This is 89.1 WGLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Still to come, with snow on the ground, it's hard to think about cutting grass. But WGLT's Grow will have something that will make that summertime task a little easier: self-guided lawnmowers. A delegation of government and business leaders in McLean County will be making an annual pilgrimage to Washington, D.C. next week. They won't be passing the hat for federal dollars this time, at least not as much. Patrick Hoban, the CEO of the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council, is heading up the One Voice trip. He talks with Eric Stock about this year being more of a fact-finding mission to explore how to expand broadband access throughout McLean County, and how Bloomington and Normal should start planning to become smart cities. He says that will require IT infrastructure planning and, of course, money.
So right now, if you think about all the aspects that have to do with autonomous cars and the amount of infrastructure we're going to have to install going forward, we need to know what best practices are and make the connections out in D.C. so that we're hooked up with the right entities that could assist us when grants do become available.
So who would you be talking to?
For that one, we're going to go speak with MetroLab. So MetroLab is a consortium that has best practices for other smart cities across the U.S.
How does 5G technology play into this?
That is yet to be determined.
So what are the biggest obstacles to becoming a smart city?
I think the biggest obstacles right now is just knowing what we need to install. We don't want to be so far ahead of the curve that we install infrastructure that's out there, and then later on the Department of Transportation comes out with standards and we're either below the standards and have to upgrade everything again. We are trying to avoid paying for it twice.
And alluding to cost, what kind of cost could you potentially be looking at? I know you're looking for grant dollars and funding opportunities, but ultimately some of this will have to come from the local community, right?
Possibly. And for us, like we said, it was the research side of things. We're not even sure what technology will need to be installed, where it will need to be installed, and just trying to blend that into upgrades that would be on the horizon anyway.
And so what kind of infrastructure are you talking about as far as towers, underground lines, those sorts of things?
A combination, yeah. So one just as simple as traffic lights. There's different traffic light technology that's out there. There's even different kinds of markings you can make on the street that make them more readable by autonomous vehicles. So that's why we want to meet with MetroLabs to see what other communities are implementing.
So if you give us a background on MetroLabs, what kind of work have they done on this so far?
Really, it's there's best practices. So it's what has been installed in other communities, and they're like a consortium that has a set of, I guess, a white paper or guidelines that we're just now, we'll hopefully have more information when we get back, but that's why we're meeting with them.
Do you have a conceptualization, even at this point, for 5, 10, 15 years from now, how much McLean County will have moved towards this effort?
It's really going to depend on how fast the regulations change when it comes to autonomous vehicles. But we want to be known as a smart city. We want to make sure that we have the infrastructure in place that's going to be able to handle everything that's coming. That's why we're really leaning towards research efforts at this point.
And then how much does that tie in with urban planning? Autonomous vehicles could potentially significantly change the landscape in terms of parking, in terms of lanes, the number of lanes, the width of those lanes. How does that play into this?
It's tied in. You know, you're spot on. This is something that's going to impact every one of us around here, not just economic development, but also regional planning. So we do have a working group that's been getting together every other week, I believe, that's just talking about smart cities in general and making sure we're on the same page. That's with the Town of Normal, City of Bloomington, both universities, Heartland, and regional planning.
So after this visit, when will the follow-up be for funding requests? Will that be next year or before that?
It'll be before that. We'll have ongoing visits out to D.C. The nice thing about One Voice, it's all of us together going out there to build those relationships. But we at the EDC plan on following up individually as well.
This is still perhaps early in the process, but Normal Mayor Chris Koos, we spoke with briefly about this recently. He said he's concerned about the emergence of 5G with all of the antennas and leading to a potentially unsightly streetscape, sort of a clutter. How do you avoid that, and is that part of the discussion in thoughtful planning?
That is definitely part of the discussion, because you want to make sure that you've got policies in place that can hopefully turn this into a beautification effort, maybe even incentivizing some things in order to be built a certain way.
Can it actually be made visually appealing or just less unsightly?
I want to say I've seen things in Florida where some of these look like palm trees. We're not going to go that far, but there could be ways that we could hopefully beautify the design.
And that would be a little incongruent here for Bloomington Normal,
correct,
although it might be nice to think about on the cold weather days we've been having lately. So how will this technology make our lives better?
Well, it's all about connectivity. I mean, right now it's about speed and connectivity and making sure that we have the infrastructure in place that's going to handle some of the new vehicles that are coming, along with the technology as our cell phones become bigger and faster. I mean, so if you don't have that connectivity, it'd be similar to not having roads back in the day. So for us to be ready for the next generation of business, we have to make sure that the infrastructure is in place.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Eric Stock with Patrick Hoban, CEO of the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council, as he's leading a delegation on the One Voice trip to Washington, D.C. in early March. So as cities like Bloomington and Normal try to ramp up to become, quote, smart cities, perhaps an indication of the digital divide, many rural communities are still looking for higher speed internet or accessible internet for them. What kind of discussions will you be having on the rural broadband front?
So one of them that we're going to go out there to talk about is on actually getting more broadband in the rural communities, and partnering and leading the charge on that one is actually Corn Belt Energy. And I believe someone that we're going to talk to is going to be the Federal Communications Commission about how we can get that expanded in McLean County.
It's going to take money, I'd assume.
I would assume so, yes. And it really depends on what grants are available, what federal funding, possibly even state dollars. And so that's one of the beauties of this trip, is going out there, building those relationships. And even if the funding isn't available now, it's having that relationship open that we can track and know when it will become available.
How strong or weak is rural broadband in McLean County?
From my personal experience, it's pretty strong here. The fact that we've got Serban shooting all across the county, it's just really trying to figure out, I think, that last mile, getting it off of Serban and into the home in some areas. Serban has done a wonderful job in this area, so I think that we're stronger than some, but we can always improve.
And what is the cost? Is there an access issue there for residents in lower-income communities or in unincorporated areas?
I think it's more the unincorporated areas just justifying the build itself. And so if there are going to be rural dollars out there that can assist with that, that's what we're trying to discover.
So there's some who may live out in the country that are not able to access it unless they are paying a considerably higher cost.
True. And it really depends on the style that it's being delivered in. It might not be actual fiber to the home, but as long as they're still connected, being one mechanism or another off of the fiber, I think that's what our goal is.
So as we continue on Sound Ideas, workforce development is another part of this effort. If you can lay out what you're looking to accomplish there.
So with the workforce development side of things, we realize that here in McLean County, we've got a 3.4% unemployment rate, which is great. But it also means that we're going to have to start working on upskilling our current labor force and possibly even bringing in additional labor to meet the needs of some of our expanding and new businesses that are coming in. So we wanted to meet with the Department of Labor just to make sure that we're aware of all the programs and tools that they have to offer in order to assist us with those workforce needs.
Any idea what kind of tools are out there?
Currently, I believe at CareerLink, there's three grant programs that we have. And we want to make sure that we're utilizing those appropriately, but also seeing if there's anything else on the horizon.
How big of an issue is this from the manufacturers that you've talked to in the community?
So far, they're finding people. I think the thing going forward is looking at all of non-major metro areas in general and the population. As you're looking at those 25 to 45-year-olds, they're really starting to relocate towards the major metros. And we want to make sure that we have the tools in place to either retain them as they're coming out of college or even pull in new and also upskill who we have.
So is it an expectation that unless you reverse the trend, it could become a greater problem in the foreseeable future?
Correct. For all of Central Illinois, pretty much anybody south of I-80 right now. We're seeing major growth when it comes to the metro of Chicago. But outside of that, there's a bit of a standstill when it comes to 25 to 45-year-olds.
Is that a skills issue? Is it a education issue? Or is it those raised who went to school recently are just not looking in that direction?
I think it could be a combination of some of those items. It could also just be the population trends itself. I mean, Generation X waited longer to have children, so there's a bit of a gap there, but also with the relocation of people, they've got the mindset, the brain drain is what they call it when you're going after the talent that's moving towards a major metro and also leaving the state of Illinois. It's something that we need to focus on.
Is there anything more that the employers can do, the manufacturers who are looking for the next generation of skilled labor?
No, they're doing wonderful jobs right now by partnering with Heartland Community College, keeping the communication open with Illinois State and Wesleyan and letting them know what the needs are going to be so we can train them. I think it's just something that's all across Central Illinois in general. There's just a gap when it comes to a generation.
Are they doing enough to make these jobs attractive?
I believe so as well, yeah. It's one of the things myself coming back down from Chicago. The jobs are attractive, and the cost of living goes along with it, so you have more disposable income. We just need to get the word out about that disposable income down here compared to living in a major city.
So it's a situation where not only keeping those in the area from leaving, but bringing more people from outside maybe the Chicago area and other parts of the state to Bloomington Normal.
That's correct. Yes, it's retaining who we've got, upskilling who we have, but also pulling in certain industries we can see being an issue going forward.
As we continue on Sound Ideas with Patrick Hoban, who is the CEO of the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council, who is heading up the annual One Voice delegation trip to Washington, D.C., March 3rd, 4th, and 5th. So this is your first trip here, and it's something that's been going on for over a decade. What are your expectations about making this trip yourself?
I'm pretty excited about the trip. It's something that I've seen be a success with the earlier announcement and Normal with their underpass, actually bringing back $13 million from a build grant. It shows that this type of activity works. So we're looking forward to building those relationships going forward and keeping up with the project that it is.
That is Patrick Hoban, CEO of the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council with Eric Stock. The delegation will seek federal funding for two local projects, a bus transfer center for Connect Transit and the Hamilton Road extension in Bloomington.
now until November, candidates will ask for your vote to be America's next president. But who will be on the ballot?
2020 is our chance.
Keep America great.
Morning Edition from NPR News takes you on the campaign trail alongside voters and the candidates on the road to Election Day.
So this is the bus, huh?
Yes. This is the bus.
This is the bus.
2020 election. It's time to listen.
I'm GLT Morning Edition host John Norton. Join me weekdays from 4 to 9 a.m. on GLT.
Support for WGLT comes from Connect Transit, providing 15-minute service between Uptown Normal and Downtown Bloomington. Get connected with Connect Transit, an award-winning public transportation provider. Details at connect-transit.com. This is 89.1 WGLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, the organ and soul of Neil Francis. John Norton offers you that music.
Support for WGLT's Grow comes from FS Farmtown by Evergreen FS. FS Farmtown is a resource for lawn and garden products, from power equipment to mower repair and maintenance and more. Details at evergreen-fs.com or at 1808 South Morrissey in Bloomington.
The future is nearly here when it comes to self-guided lawnmowers. In this edition of our gardening podcast, Grow, listen as ISU's Patrick Murphy and WGLT's Mike McCurdy tell you what to expect, including a huge time savings.
Automation generally makes our lives easier, freeing up time for other things. And now an outdoor task that eats up endless hours is closer to virtually taking care of itself, hands-free. I'm Mike McCurdy. This is WGLT's gardening podcast, Grow, with our expert Patrick Murphy from ISU's School of Biological Sciences and the Fell Arboretum. Patrick, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
Automated mowing, really? It sounds dangerous without some sort of human intervention, maybe a human guiding or pushing the riding or driving the riding lawnmower. How do these mowers work?
Basically, Mike, they work in the same manner that a self-guided Roomba vacuum works. They learn their boundaries with a little help from a guy wire that's similar to what you find with a invisible fence for your doggy.
But a Roomba doesn't have spinning sharp blades on it either.
No,
so,
it doesn't.
So what about safety concerns? Children, pets, is there some sort of automatic shutoff?
There is an automatic shutoff. So not just children and pests, but say you left something important like a fly swatter laying in the grass, and the
or a garden hose
might be a little different, but here's my understanding on how the safety shutoffs work. One, it could sense somebody approaching it, so if it was a pet or a human being, it will probably turn off until that sensor has alleviated itself and there's nobody there. But if you leave a fly swatter or your favorite Ever Sharp or something like that, it's probably going to hit it. And that'll change the mower's course a little bit, and it'll have to correct for it. But it does have some safety protocols. It'd be very difficult to run up and grab the running mower before the blades had already shut off.
If I shop around, I can get a good push mower for under $250. What are the self-guided mowers costing?
Right now, they're in a $1,500 to $2,200 range for the ones that are manufactured by Steel, the good folks that have been making chainsaws for us for a long time. They're going to be even more expensive because my understanding is Echo is another big power tool manufacturer and a brand. They're coming out with larger versions that are more suitable for commercial applications.
But they can pay for themselves in terms of time savings or, in a commercial application, HR costs.
There are a lot of beneficial opportunity cost realizations there. So in addition to the human stuff that you mentioned, you know, human resources have less management of personnel, for example. That's the environmental aspects are important, too, because you're going to be breathing in less of the small engine exhaust. There's less of the noise pollution that comes about from using power tools, which I use frequently, but that's how we're doing it right now.
What's the capacity of these mowers?
The mowers that we've talked about in the current price range, they can mow a quarter acre of turf a week. So, you know, once you take away the driveway and the planting areas and the patio and stuff like that, that's a reasonable size of turf. That's a reasonable amount of turf in somebody's yard. But it's something that's going to be happening all the time. So that combined with the cutting sizes and the battery life, there's going to be some getting used to and adjustment periods.
So it saves time for the person doing the mowing, but these robot mowers, they're working all of the time.
They do work more frequently, and they work in a way that's different from our traditional approach to rolling your sleeves up and mowing for an hour or longer. This is going to mow a piece of property a little bit at a time over the course of, say, 5 to 7 days. And it's also going to do it in a kind of a quiet way, and it's kind of stealthy. You know, you can't see evidence of it as much initially, I think, that people used to see those stripes in the yard and stuff.
So your lawn will always sort of be mowed.
Yeah.
Or close to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So how big are these things? What sort of swath are they cutting through the yard?
The ones that we're talking about in the price range are right now available in two sizes. They are 7.8 inches and 11 inches. So that's a lot smaller than the mower that we're pushing around. But you got to think, this thing is battery powered, and it's got the little rotating blades, and that's where most of the energy from the battery is focused.
I mean, a standard push mower is, what, 22 inches?
22, 24 inches, yeah.
So this is why it's mowing all of the time or regularly.
That's right.
Is it as easy as parking your old mower and turning on the self-guided mower? I assume you at least have to set up the boundaries somehow.
Yeah, I think, like everything in life, setup is the key. So when somebody brings us to their yard for the first time, they're going to be encountered with the decision making of what do I mow around, because that's going to require a greater level of setup. So if you have planting areas that are within the turf, so the turf is surrounding them, they'll have to be boundaried off. And the same would be true if you had a great big tree that you had, you know, some mulch, not too much mulch around the tree, right? But you don't want it to just bump against the tree and change directions. You want it to mow around. So these boundaries that all have to be kind of laid in and defined before you go and sell your mower on Marketplace or whatever.
So unlike a Roomba, you don't want it bouncing off the wooden fence. You want to set up a boundary there.
That's right. It would mow along the fence, but it would mow with a couple of inches clearance so that it's not bumping the fence. So you're still going to have to string trim with the self-guided mowers. You're still going to have to get that thing out.
What about storing the mower?
The only limitation in storing the mower is during cold weather. It can be rained on. It can even do some mowing during rainfall. If there's not too much rain and not enough to kind of choke up the blades, because this thing's not shooting grass out. It's just dropping the grass where it's cut, which is best
for
the lawn.
It's mulching it.
Yeah, it's mulching it. So if it gets below 45 degrees outside, one would need to bring the unit inside, at least to, say, your garage, where it stays above that temperature so it doesn't soak the battery with just, you know, cold air, just like our car or motorcycle battery.
Only runs during the daytime, or will it cut overnight?
It will not run at night.
So it has to be able to sort of sense or see its surroundings?
That's right.
And what about downsides? You mentioned the turf stripes.
Well, the downside is, I think, just getting used to it, and the turf stripe is something that
if you really like the way that looks, this isn't going to be for you.
Yeah, but it's also associated with doneness or finished look or a high level of police or maintenance. You're not going to get that, but on the other side of the coin, you're getting a mow that is a really clean cut from a blade that's surgical in quality. And dropping all those clippings and not blowing them all over Kingdom Come, that's good for your yard, too, to keep them right there. So when I was talking to the experts about this, Mike, they indicated that that's another way that this thing can pay you back over time, is that it will start to reduce some of the pesticide problems that you might have, because you're just growing a better stand of turf, which is more resistant to all the problems.
So that's one of the positives, is a better stand of turf. You'll see a more natural appearance. What else?
People are going to want to do things to their yard to make the mowing more complete. And, you know, that's something I anticipate us talking about with this scenario, is it's going to have a huge impact on the way landscapes are designed, I think, going forward. And that's going to be interesting to see. And it's also interesting to contrast with what the lawn has become when they put engines on top of lawnmowers. So, you know, we had sheep and goats grazing in the lawn, and then we had real type mowers. And then we had the rotary mowers with an engine on them. All of those stages of manicuring our lawn have changed the way we have lawns.
Sure, if we have power lawnmowers, we're going to have bigger lawns.
More turf, right.
And then there's the time savings, too.
This is quite an innovation if one considers all the time that we've spent sitting on or pushing a mower, standing behind it. It's going to replace that. We all love nice lawns, nice grass and turf. But I always, personally, Mike, myself, I always felt like this was not my first choice of activity, especially on our time off, you know.
It's a chore.
Yeah.
If you have any questions about turf and keeping it trimmed or about anything else in the garden or landscape, send them in and Patrick Murphy with ISU's School of Biological Sciences will answer them. I'm Mike McCurdy. Send your questions to wglt.org/grow.
You can subscribe to Grow and see our other podcasts at wglt.org.
Grow comes from FS Farmtown by Evergreen FS. FS Farmtown offers power equipment, mower repair, propane cylinder exchange, fuels, and more. Details at evergreen-fs.com or 1808 South Morrissey in Bloomington. This is 89.1 WGLT and WGLT.org.
Coming up at 7 this evening is World Cafe. Much like Grateful Dead fans are called Deadheads and fish lovers Fishheads, the fans of the band Pigeons Playing Ping Pong are known as The Flock. Don't call this band a jam band, though. Find out why during World Cafe from 7 to 9 tonight on 89.1 and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Oak Park native and organ aficionado Neil Francis infuses his original music with a classic soul vibe of the 1960s. His debut album, Changes, is accompanied by lyrics that document his work to overcome addictions and other demons. A year later, his new single, Don't Call Me No More, continues that effort. But before he addressed those serious songs, Francis talked with WGLT's John Norton about his early keyboard training, which includes playing the pipe organ as a grade schooler during the biweekly masses at his Catholic church in Oak Park.
I thought it was fantastic because I would get to sit in the back and not pay attention and just, you know, play okay. The pipe organ when it was time. Especially when I got a little older, I started messing around, I would just blast that thing and play it. Like, it got really, really loud. You know, the last hymn of the service for like school services, you know, it would really piss off my classmates. Also, when I would play like all five verses of the hymn because they were trying to get out of the church service. Yeah, that's a stupid story, but
no,
it was better than like we would have like bi-weekly masses. So it was a nice way to like kind of break up I wasn't just sitting there, at least, you know.
Neil Francis is our guest here on WGLT's Sound Ideas. You got a new single out. It's called Don't Call Me No More. Let me play a little bit of this one, all right?
Give the people what they want. I keep telling lies until I make it. You think I've got what you want? Everything I have is for the taking.
Giving people what they want, I'll keep telling lies till I make it.
Yeah, that's from the song.
Where does that come from?
Well, I mean, the song's about this girl that I was seeing across town that it was kind of a clandestine situation. There was a time at which I, like, you know, needed to give that relationship up. And I suppose the songs, the lyrics now just seem a little bit harsh and two-dimensional, but at the time I wrote it like the day of the recording session, and I was just like going through this instance where like she kept hitting me up, and it was really hard for me to, you know, not indulge and go over and see her, even when I knew it was something I shouldn't be doing.
Do yourself a favor.
Lying, cheating, like that's just been a character defect that I've been trying to sort through, you know, my entire adult life. You know, at times it's difficult, man. I'm just trying to write about it and be honest about it.
Keep your hands off my hand.
Me No More is the new single from our guest, Neil Francis. A year ago, we were talking about the album Changes. It hadn't quite come out yet, but you had the single, These Are the Days. And the album turned out to be, as I'm hearing it, is exactly what you're talking about. Trying your best to turn your life around, to turn your habits around, things like that. Let me play the song Changes, parts 1 and 2, just a little bit.
Changes running through my life, and you get farther and farther behind me, and I'm not answering.
So you were hinting at some of those problems that you have gone through, and you're very open about it on your website as well, some of the addictions that you've had, some of the problems that has led to breaking up with bands. How did you get past all of that?
I'm not past it. It's just still like, I gave up drinking, and I haven't had a drink since October of 2015, and I'm not here to make anybody uncomfortable, but I'm just like, I want to be transparent about my life. I feel like I help more people that way. You know, I get more out of it that way. So it's just a daily, something we all deal with, you know, it's just like, wake up and try and do better the next day and, you know, mitigate this daily suffering that's attached to all these things that I think I want. I want everything now. I want everything yesterday. I'm an instant gratification type of person, and where I find the most peace and serenity is where I like detach myself from material possessions and, you know, physical things.
And I'm not really sure how to live my life. I'll just take it slow. I'll just take it slow.
After I've written them and released them, they're taking on new meaning, you know, even for myself. Changes is a really apt title for the record. You know, I have like a really cosmic attachment to it. And the next record, I'm going to be writing about things that have to do with my relationships in sobriety. And I'm writing that material now. And I'm learning so much about myself and trying to stay committed to, you know, my own mental health and spiritual growth.
And I'm guessing this music kind of keeps you on that path.
Yeah, well, I have these opportunities ahead of me today, and I just can't believe all the stuff that's happening in the last few months, just things that we have on the horizon that are booked. Like, some of it I can't even share with you, but it's just, it's like I'm living a life beyond my wildest dreams, and I want to keep that, and I want to grow, and I want to back and show my gratitude for everything that's happened to me, because, you know, I still feel like I'm living on borrowed time every day that I'm sober.
Well, Neil Francis, your calling card is what I would call retro soul. I don't know how you would put it, but it sounds like stuff from the late 60s, early to mid 1970s that Stax Music and those guys were putting out. Is this a sound that you feel tethered to, or are you looking to incorporate more sounds?
Well, I've thought about that a lot. You know, I don't need to be anachronistic with my songwriting or the content of my songs, and I don't really want to be paying tribute or imitating anybody, but I'm so in love with the sonic profile of the music that was created in that period that, like, I just, you know, for the time being, for the foreseeable future, I'm just interested in creating music that has that sort of palette of sounds. And I love using that old equipment. And it's like, you know, if an oil painter were told that they could achieve the same results using an iPad to create whatever work they're creating, would they be compelled to use it over their oil paints? Like, that's kind of how I feel like with using tape and all this old, you know, messed up analog gear, is that there's a lot more involved in the recording process, and it may be more cumbersome at times, but I just like the results that are achieved.
So
soulful keyboard player Neil Francis speaking with WGLT's John Norton. Francis returns to Jazz Up Front Thursday night. Discover local music and hear from artists playing in Central Illinois on the WGLT Music Podcast. Find it on NPR One or your favorite podcast app. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org. Our website is also where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories, which today came from Ryan Denham, Eric Stock, John Norton, Mike McCurdy, and Patrick Murphy. I'm Charlie Schlenker. You can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One. Here's some more of Neil Francis. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT, and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.